This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Yeah, K108, and that was Emmanuel James, The Sky is Falling. What's, or crying, as a matter of fact. Yeah, the sky is crying. It's a beautiful day outside, though. It's not crying. But anyway, it's a Sunday. It's time for Carol Cox this morning. I think Carol is going to have a guest later on, so let's join Carol right now.
Morning, good morning,
Carol.
Everybody, and aloha. I drove in this morning and looking at the fog, and man, if you see the layering of the mountains, the effect that it gives, looking back into the Coal Isles toward Diamond Head and up on the Pali, absolutely stunning, rather picturesque. But anyway, today I was going to have just some chat about, you hear me ranting about the landfill and various issues, And what I wanted to do is try and get some science and people that are in the industry. And so I was fortunate to talk or cajole or badger, I should say, Mr. Steve Joseph, who is a hydrologist, and he is a hydrogeologist who has actually worked for the Waimanawa Gulch Landfill. He's currently working for PVT Landfill. And he's worked on the task force, I'll call it a task force, regarding groundwater leachate and what have you. And that may not be the proper title for that effort, but he'll clarify that. But what I wanted to do is talk about the many issues, the shipping of trash, and because it's all related. The leachate that we see is related to trash. It's a product that when we pile trash high and deep and water, the rain falls on it, and the waters and the fluids that are generated by stacking of trash creates leachate, or we call it wastewater. And there's concerns from volatile organics, and there's mostly leachate is salty. And you probably heard me talking about in the Kaiwainui Marsh, where the city was dumping. Now, why I reached out for Mr. Joseph on this and other subjects is that even though they're doing it illegal to the city to dumping it and the state failing to manage it, it really, there's a benefit. But my angle and concern is that we take something so simple that could be managed properly and turn it into criminal activity. For example, dumping the leachate illegally, when in fact, as Steve will share with you, it could be managed and used, and in most instances, the leachate is a salty base, or almost a salty like water, clear, but it has heavy metals and whatever. But what you'd want to do is manage that. And so I'm hoping through this, just simply got lucky and talked into it. And I'm sure anybody out there that got questions for Steve regarding this or trash or anything along the Waianae Coast side, let's take an opportunity and seize the opportunity, I should say, and chime in. 524-1080. And you can also pick this up at podcast or listen to it on the internet at carolcox.com, and you can send us an email at carol@carolcox.com. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to save gas, and I know you guys are always talking about going green, so I figured just one of us driving into the station, and I'll let you stay there and drink your coffee and talk with us. But thank you for daring to come and talk. I'm sure there's some people would like to throw sticks at you and poke sticks at you, but I appreciate you taking the opportunity, or giving us the opportunity, I should say, and sharing with us. And one of those things, I wanted to lay out some of the things regarding first the Waimanala Gulch, and we were going to be talking about leachate and all, and both at Kapaa Quarry and leachate in general. Now, we know that some of the background at the Waimanala Gulch landfill, we know that in 2008 of July, the ash landfill, they notified that it would be up to capacity in 1 year. Well, we're closing in to July now, and maybe that ash landfill has reached or reaching or has exceeded its capacity. I don't know. We also know that the Waimanala Gulch landfill, the extension was in for November of this year from the Land Use Commission. The environmental impact statement was just completed, and they're still mulling over that. And we also know that the permit for the landfill has expired in April of last year. So the state really can't prosecute the city or waste management, because you are operating without a permit and you put in an application. The state allowed them 180 days, and they've exceeded that. So in order to prosecute them for violation, there would have to be conditions in a valid permit. So all they could possibly prosecute them for would be operating without a permit. So having laid that out, can you give us some kind of insight on that and other things relating to this issue?
Yeah, I can help you a little bit with it. The way it generally works is if you have a valid application for a renewal on your permit, then normally the condition they put upon you is that you continue to operate on your old permit until your new one and the new conditions or whatever stipulations they put on it are in place and signed off.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally the way they operate. So I would assume that even though they are operating without a permit, they are operating exactly like they have in the past.
Uh-huh. And as far as the capacity there, some are offering the solution to this capacity. Well, they have the 15-year expansion request, and what do you think about that? Give us your opinion, your professional or personal opinion, as to is the Waimanalo Gulch, in your opinion, a good spot, bad spot, or is it what would you have to say about that?
Well, much like the Blue Ribbon Commission did, the problem you have is that it's, you know, there's a couple of conditions you probably want to meet. You want to be on fairly dry side of the island so that you don't have to deal with as much leachate generation. That kind of limits you to something along either the south or west side. The other thing is, if you're on sites that already have groundwater that's impacted by saltwater intrusion, then you're going to have much, much less impact on drinking water because, you know, drinking water for us is very precious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been through everything with ag issues and pesticides and everything else that have gotten into drinking water. But, so, I mean, those are kind of the conditions you're stuck with. That being the case, actually, Waimanalo Gulch is probably, I mean, given, here's the problem is our backs are against the wall now for getting another site because of a lot of circumstances, political and otherwise, and the cost to ship out is just unbelievably expensive, and the other thing is if we're shipping out waste or trash, we're shipping out energy off the island because I know there's a lot of other options that are coming in. And, I mean, you look at the amount of power we generate at H-Power by burning the trash that does come in, and that's indeed a benefit. And there's that much fewer barrels of oil we have to use to meet our power requirements over here.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, given that and the closeness between H-Power and where the gulch is, it makes it easy for the haul the ash over. It makes it very economical. And that, if I was looking at sites on the mainland, the conditions that exist at the gulch would make it a very attractive and a very appropriate site to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is from engineering, geological standpoint. I won't attempt to address cultural issues. It's not my area of expertise.
And it's a contentious one, and in some instances, justifiable.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to argue either side of that one.
Yeah. It just depends on the circumstance. But I think what I've noticed about this, and I've watched this issue of trash and landfill locations and site, and it seems that the regulators, it's watching a boxing match, poorly refereed. The referee only gets involved in the fight and make rulings when the fans start to complain to him, and that's what happens with the state, for example, here. You know, instead of just coming up with best management and employing that, and you know, there's no perfect world. I am as responsible as much as anybody else because I generate waste in my household and in my life ways. So I think, do you believe that if we just were to tighten up our belts and had a little more, not regulatory, but a little more quickness in our efforts to manage through the government agencies and adhering to some of the rules, would that benefit us?
Yeah, definitely would. And, you know, the other thing is that some of the rules that are in place need to be revisited as to their appropriateness. I've been here and involved in it since the beginning of, you know, when the rules came into place, we started implementing Subtitle D, the federal regs, into state law. And much of that was brought together with cobbled together out of pieces from other states. And, you know, some of that stuff doesn't work too well. Probably needs to be revisited and in some cases fixed, some nuances that came in that probably shouldn't have been in there. But I think the one thing we always have to keep sight of in Hawaii is that we were really lucky from the standpoint that we never had the kind of industrial uses which generated tremendously bad waste. And, you know, I've worked on sites in the mainland. I've worked on Superfund sites where, I mean, there was this wholesale dumping of really nasty stuff. And, I mean, we're fortunate in Hawaii in that our waste is relatively benign.
Uh-huh. You know, you take, for example, Chicago area, Wolf Lake, and those areas. You're familiar with those?
Yeah. And Love Canal.
Love Canal. And I mean where, you know, you drive through and your tires glow.
Yeah.
You know, and that is something we haven't taken into consideration. But, you know, there's this this discussion about shipping out, and they're moving closer, and you alluded to it a bit. Is that a smart idea, or what? And is there technologies and things that are available that we can keep this trash here? I mean, first of all, we need to just start reducing the amount of trash we generate and look at some of the rules, you know, as far as packaging and requiring the big boxes and the other stores to shy away from so much waste and packaging. But what do you think about reusing it and generating fuel? Is there anything that you could share with the public?
Yeah, you know, I follow a lot of the stuff. I mean, you know, we're really involved in it. And I agree with you. It needs to be, you know, there are ways that we can reduce waste, and especially on stuff. We have a problem here that is kind of unique to being in an island. Because things come in. We get more waste, and we generate more waste per person on the island than they do in other parts of the U.S. And the main reason is because we're an endpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff gets shipped in, packaging gets shipped in, and it's really hard to recycle out of Hawaii. And we just end up with more on our end because we're an endpoint. The problem is that the shipping gets involved, and any time shipping gets involved, the cost for recycling just skyrockets. Because things I could recycle on sites on the mainland, I can't recycle here because as soon as I put it on a ship, it becomes economically impossible to do. It's just a killer. And essentially, our waste that comes in here is energy. And can be used for energy. I know of at least two companies that are working on things right now which will produce energy out of waste that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that is a good thing. Rather than, essentially, if we're shipping out trash, we're shipping out energy, and that we could go, that could go toward generating power or other things here on the island, energy uses here on the island, that would save us having to import oil. And if anybody thinks oil prices are going to stay low, they're dreaming. Oil prices are going to go right back up again. And essentially, some of those dollars go to fund terrorists. I mean, you want to stop terrorism, you know, quit buying overseas oil.
Well, you know, what I'd like to say is also, you know, yes, it might be funding terrorists, but lately, with the raising of the taxes here by our local officials, it also is funding useless and government that can't make a decision, come together in January and leave in May and give themselves a raise, and we're still standing. What? You know, so I don't, yeah, it might be funding terrorists, but right now, I just pumped gas yesterday, Costco, the cheapest place in town, $2.44 a gallon. You know, so you're right. It we are shipping out fuel, and when you add that up, how much energy do you think we could save if there was a way of reducing the plastic packagings and all of those bottles and things like that? Do you think that we could recognize a savings here in the state of Hawaii?
Oh, definitely. definitely could. And I mean, essentially, for every 500 tons that we ship off the island that's of trash, that represents about 20 megawatts, or about half of the capacity, you know, of H power, somewhere, or a third of it, somewhere around there, mm-hmm. of the generation. So, I mean, if we ship 1,000 tons out, we're shipping out somewhere probably between 26 and 40 megawatts of power.
Which represents what? How many houses or how many state capitol buildings that...
I think they figure 1,000 houses per megawatt. I may be wrong on that, but somewhere around there. So, I mean, you know, that's a lot of power generation. Or if you want to think about it, let's see, the rail is going to use 100 megawatts.
Right.
So that's what, almost half or somewhere between a third and half of the power generation it's going to take to run that that rail.
Wow.
Just leaving the island. So, I mean, you know, and if we can do that, then we cut down on the need for additional, you know, fuel-powered, you know, electrical supply. That combined with, if we fully embrace, like the governor suggested, wind and solar, this state has the best chances of any state in the union for getting oil reduced to the only thing we use it for is to run cars, and in the future we may not even need that.
Right. And then I see some of the oil companies, especially Chevron, there was a discussion that they may have to close down because of cost and the taxes and this and that. So we better start, I guess, recycling. And you know, in recycling this waste, some of the alternatives, we know that there's been the representation of ARC, what's that, Plasma ARC, and... Herhoff, and now there's gasification. There's a couple of companies proposing that. Is how efficient of the three, and also to include this, are they adding a third boiler at the H power or a second boiler? You never know if one's working or not. Which of these would you say is most efficient?
Well, actually, for the greatest efficiency on it is probably that third boiler at H power, followed by the gasification, followed by Plasmark, if you look at costs and power generation on it. The downside is that when you fire it off H power, you get more, you know, your air issues come in as far as contaminants that get released in the air and contaminants left in the trash. Gasification, the contaminants are all basically gone out of it, and same thing with the Plasmark. And they probably, you know, costs are probably in that order too. Now, gasification has been used. There's over 300 units in Japan. There's more units in Europe. And actually, Europe, I just was talking to some people the other day, Europe is going very strongly for gasification to convert essentially waste into gas. Their big problem was, or their reality check is, they power a lot of things by gas. Their reality check came when Russia in the dead of winter shut off gas, because that shut it off to Europe, and that really created a problem. So they're very much now involved in taking waste and generating essentially CNG, or, you know, it's not natural gas, synthetic natural gas, for their own use over there.
Was this the Ukraine?
Yeah, remember when they shut it off? No, all of Europe. See, Europe gets a lot of oil from, you know, the North Sea and like that, but they don't have a tremendous volume of gas.
Mm-hmm.
They buy most of their gas from Russia, because Russia has tremendous resources in natural gas. The flip of that is when it's coming through the Ukraine and they shut off, and Russia shuts off the gas, it affects Europe.
And especially in the midwinter.
In the middle of winter, yeah, you want to pick the worst possible time. I mean, I know you've been over and I've been over, and you know how things operate over there. You shut off the gas in the dead of winter, you've really impacted them.
Yeah, that's, I guess, hopefully we here in Hawaii don't have to experience that. I guess we can, we're falsely comforted by the fact that it's a tropical setting, but all of our things operate basically on gas, on oil right now, and it poses, if some disruption or a great belch or a hiccup, we may find ourselves devastated.
Yeah, that is it. I mean, I really love the, I mean, we have so many things that to be thankful for, the climate, but the trade winds, which give you a really constant, a fairly constant wind, so you can generate power, the amount of sun we have, and I know the efficiencies are going up. I read a lot of the literature. We follow it real closely on solar, and I mean, it's conceivable for us to use very little oil. We could be using less oil than we're using now.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Steve, we're going to take a break for a minute, and we'll come back, and if you would hold on.
Sure.
Okay, we're going to take a break here, and we'll be right back with you. Carol Cox at 524-1080.
This is Bill Holloman with the Tuskegee Airmen Scholarship Fund. We send young people, deserving young people, to college. Please contact me, 206-963-5663 or 253-852-7237 at the address 9240 South 240th Place, Kent, Washington, 98030. Your donations are appreciated, helping send young kids to school. Thank you.
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson, the book Red Tail Captured, Red Tail Free, Memoirs of a Tuskegee Airman, Prisoner of War in Germany for 9 months, $32. Contact me, 18126 Brinker Street, Detroit, Michigan, 48234, or call me, 313-368-0674. Thank you.
In the uproar, people singing a song. The way he read this couldn't up. Hang on being along, I might dig myself a hole. Move my baby down in the ground. You know when I come out, there won't be no walls around. They take me to the riverfront to cross the deep blue sea. My baby's wondering, man, what become of me? I might dig myself a cave, move my baby down in the ground. You know when I come out, there won't be no walls around. You, that's all right now, mama. Any way you do, I might dig myself a cave, move my baby down in the ground. You know when I come out, there won't be no walls around. You know I love my baby, and I want her for myself. If I go to war, she got to get somebody else. I might dig myself a cave, move my baby down in the ground. You know when I come out, there won't be no walls around.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I have Steve Joseph, a hydrogeologist, and we're talking trash and the byproducts of trash, management of trash, recycling, and we got a caller called in, and they want to remain anonymous, and I always like to have people, if you straight talk, if something this innocuous, you know, put a name with you. But we'll welcome you anyway. Anonymous, are you there?
Yes.
All righty. You got a question for Steve, a comment?
Yeah. Thank you for bringing some other choices to us on how to take care of our trash. The question I have is, when you look at the two options, the gasification and the one he talked about, can that occur on, must it occur on the dry side of the island? Because, you know, earlier you talked about leachate and why you need to try to be on the dry side. So when you look at these options, does that, those options neutralize the need to be on the dry side? Can gasification occur anywhere in other geographic places on an island?
Steve,
other
you
than
there?
The dry side.
Yep.
Alrighty.
That's a really good question. And here's where the nuances of what you're actually doing come into it. The problem here is you're gonna have to do a lot of things with this in prep before this stuff can go in through, like gasification and any of the other ones, even including plasma. And part of the problem is that that waste needs to be dry. So you basically need to move this stuff outside at some point, whether it's when you're loading, whether it's when you're doing your grind, because you do have to prep this stuff much like H-Power does. You have to grind this stuff into a size range that will make this stuff easily gasified or easily burned, either case. And moisture is a negative on it. You want to have it as dry as you can going in. Otherwise, you waste a lot of energy just getting rid of the water. So the problem is it comes back to, you know, you need to be somewhere fairly dry, and then you need to be close to a point in which you can put power into the system, either electrical power or gas or whatever your choice is on the thing, how you're going to use the power, whether it's going to be steam or whatever it is, needs to be at a point where you can put it into the system for maximum effectiveness. So if you have it on the west side of the island, you have two problems. One, water, and then in general, you're not close to a spot to put it into the grid or put it into gasification or the steam.
Mm-hmm. Are you there, caller?
Yes.
Any other questions or comments? Go ahead. Help yourself.
Well, does that work? I mean, he was talking about gasification. Does that apply also to the plasma arc? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear from the phones. I could turn my radio on, and I missed his answer at the beginning.
Okay. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. Well, any of them, even including the plasma, has issues with moisture in it. The more moisture you put in, the more energy it takes to vitrify it.
Okay. My other question then is, I heard the latter part of the explanation. You talked about needing to be in proximity to some way to distribute the energy that you generated at the site. So do we have a distribution system? Is that there? Is that an infrastructure we have to create?
No, actually, the distribution systems are already here. I mean, it's kind of like probably the, you know, what turns out for us over here, the best point to site something like this is probably in Campbell, because you have most of the distribution comes out of Campbell anyway. You could site these things literally in town next to Loa Tower where the current oil fire is, or, you know, other places on the island in a smaller degree, then you increase your transportation costs, because actually most of these reduce waste by tremendous volumes. H-Power, not as much, but it's still a tremendous volume reduction, something like 90%. Gasification is something like you're left with about, you do about 95% reduction in size. So, I mean, the upside of that is your landfill lasts much, much longer. And the ash actually is used on the mainland. Many sites on the mainland use the ash for other products, mostly like CMU bricks, roadways, stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you end up with very little waste coming back that actually has to be landfilled. So you can increase the life of your landfill and not have to move it all over the island. Just, you know.
You know, Steve, I got a question now. Are we talking municipal solid waste? Are we talking C&D, construction and debris, or food waste? Is there just in one in general? How will this be done?
Well, any of these can take any essentially biomass, in other words, even food waste. The problem, of course, with food waste is that it starts out with a fairly high moisture. So if you can compost to get the moisture out, you lose some of the BTU value, but in turn, you've dried it out. You know, you got to always take a look at the economics on that. But it works very well with C&D waste or MSW waste.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Tires. Anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Paula, you any other?
No, I'll think about some more questions, but thank you for bringing this guest on the air. It really helps when we have people who are knowledgeable and because then they're not speaking, you know, more misinformation.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your guest being there. Waste is a big problem for us on the island.
Well, I'm hoping that the public find itself behind in the game at all turns, you know, and something has to give and change. It's because apparently things are happening and the circumstances develop and the public is left trying to understand. So my goal in the coming weeks or months is to reach out and bring on and just have them to come in and talk so the public can be informed, because we, in instances, we really can't trust that the state is going to do exactly what it should do, and that there is nothing. We have waste, and the state should be more efficient in its management. If there's a permit required, then get a permit and put conditions on it and be done with it. But that's why I reached out for Steve today, and whether some of you agree or probably have different issues with him or others, I'm looking for a way to educate us, the general public, now, because there's just so much for years now, as you say, Carla, we've talked about it, and we're left holding the bag.
I have another question that Mr. Joseph touched on. Through his experience, he said that there are some things within the, what do you call them, the rules? I don't know if he called it Section B or it's Part 2 or something like
Title
that.
Title B.
Yeah. And he said, you
Subtitle
know,
Subtitle B.
Yeah, he said something about or alluded to, like, things could be better, nuances that came from the mainland, maybe need to be tweaked here. So if Mr. Joseph could be forthright and share with us where he thinks we could make improvements on that, on those, on the language and the enforcement side. Thank you.
All right, Carla. Steve?
Yeah.
She had a question for you.
Yeah, I've been afraid to tell you how the rule came into being.
Well, tell us. we're the laymen and the laywomen, and so, you know.
Yeah, well, what happened was, Subtitle B, the federal rule, was enacted. Okay, now, the state, in order to be an approved state, needed to put it into Hawaii rules and regs. We had to, promulgate. Well, you know, everybody kind of looked at each other and said, well, other states are already doing this. For us to try and come up with our own version is going to be tough. So it was cobbled together from New York, Florida, and I think it was Oregon. Don't quote me for sure on all of this. But essentially, our rule was cobbled together from some other ones. And actually, they did a tremendous job on it, and it does function. but I know for a fact that New York's has been revised. I know Florida's been revised. So, I mean, you know, because of things exactly that, they found that things didn't work exactly like they thought they would when they wrote the rule. So, you know, you need to come back and do revisions on it. Even the Subtitle D rule, I've talked, because I work on, you know, I've worked with the groundwater group over here on that, and we knew and talked to the guys that actually wrote the Subtitle D rule, and they figured that within 5 years they would come back and revise all the things that didn't work in it, because they didn't think they got it right the first time out the door. And the problem was, though, that group was disbanded and shipped off to other areas in the Fed, and they never got a chance to come back and do it. I mean, when we were writing the guidance document for groundwater and how you test for groundwater and all the nuances of that, we talked directly to the guys that wrote the Subtitle D. And even they said, oh, yeah, we weren't sure this was going to work, and we can see now that it doesn't. But none of us can go back and revise it because we're not, you know, that isn't in effect anymore. I mean, they just don't have the group together.
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, we did a tremendous job,
mm-hmm.
you know, in doing that, but there's some, not, you know, some stuff that doesn't function too well.
Right. Call, are you still there? Are you? Anyway, I always appreciate anybody calling in and asking questions, because, you know, Steve, it's kind of one of the saddest moments for me is when you go to these public hearings and public meetings, and you know the public has a great interest because it's theirs. It's a life thing, in fact. And they don't get a chance, and there is, it's like sparring, giving them a toothpick, and you're sparring with someone with a spear, and it leaves them, you know, with a lot to be desired. And I appreciate you just availing yourself for even that question. Up at Kapaa Quarry, I had earlier said we'd talk about it real briefly.
Uh-huh.
You know, I found that they were diverting leachate and had a system rigged and to divert it and what have you. I found out that, just for example, and when I mentioned all this and came and talked about it on air, what I had found up there, there was a representation that it was some new information, and the city was taken aback that they didn't know anything about it. But what I pulled up the state records, and here's just some basic things that I found, that in December 11th and December 12th of 2008, they had sump pump overflow, and they had 300 gallons per minute was going into the manhole, which was about a 50 to 100 gallons per minute, right?
Uh-huh.
At an average flow of 75 gallons. This is what the city reported to the state. Now, these are the people that pretended not to know anything when we broke the story there on a KHON. And anyway, it all comes out that they reported that over 200,000 gallons, 200,000 gallons of leachate was dumped into the Kaiwainui Marsh just in those 2 days. And there's been many, many events. And this is leachate, and leachate can be bad and volatile organics and could be heavy metals, but sometimes it's not. But why do you think they're taking such a casual approach to this? And what would you recommend that be implemented in the management of just leachate, for example?
Yeah, leachate, again, I go back to, we're fortunate we live in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Our leachate, for the most part, is relatively benign. Doesn't mean you can just dump it anywhere you want to. It definitely, you do have to look at it. And each side is individual
mm-hmm.
in how you look at it, and actually individual probably in how you deal with it.
Right.
We're fortunate, though, for many of the heavy metals, if there's any in there, and for the most part in our trash there isn't. Most of the ones that have a lot of heavy metals are ones that took a lot of industrial dumping, which we haven't had, but we're fortunate to, again, we live in Hawaii. Most of the dirt that gets mixed in with it that red soil is iron oxide in there, and iron oxide locks up so many of the metals, it just complexes with them, makes them insoluble, takes them out of solution, they're stuck in the trash. But what's been done on the mainland, and I think this is a very appropriate way, say, to handle it over on the wet side of the island, is many of the landfills have developed marshes. They do their own little marsh. They pump in the leachate, and they have plants in there that fixate a lot of the things, take a lot of the salts out, and then at the end point, they release it into another body of water, and essentially at that point, it's all treated. Now, we have people at University of Hawaii that could do something like this in conjunction with the city, put a marsh in, test it in at the front, put an artificial marsh, plant the plants, figure out which ones you're going to fixate what, treat it, and then dump it into the marsh, which is the appropriate way to do something like that. And for a project like this, they could set up one that would be useful at other landfills in dealing with their leachate. So, I mean, it would be a great thing to do both from the university standpoint and from the information that gets released out.
I see. Hey, you know, the caller didn't hang up. They got disconnected, so she's back. And as I say, I'm more interested in having others ask these questions because to educate the public. So, caller, you still there?
Yeah.
All righty. Fire away.
You know, is there a future program you could do where Mr. Joseph and the people who are, you know, I'm back to that last question about the subtitle B. Could there be a discussion where Mr. Joseph could enlighten our state officials on how to improve our regulations, because I he's the most informative person I've heard so far in any of these discussions.
Well, now keep in mind, now this is a low budget operation. So, Steve, how much would we have to pay you? Not if you go above $1 an hour, it won't happen. would you be amenable to that and willing to participate in such a? I mean, the time is available. I'll set the next 3 weeks aside for you, or the next month. Every Sunday morning, we'll talk until we can talk trash on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I would be happy to talk trash, and you know, I love trash. But you know, actually, a lot of the state people that were involved, the old time guys that were involved in it, and they're still over there, you know, agree with me. I think that, you know, it should be revisited, and there are some groups that could work with the state to do it, much like we did with the groundwater guidance document. That was private companies, other interested parties, professionals, and then the state. And, you know, we worked out the guidance on that thing, and I think the subtitle, you know, our rules could, the same thing could be done, and probably should be done, would definitely improve things.
Yeah. Well, Cole, if you've got any suggestions as to who and when, I'd be happy. You can call me off air and we can set it up and you guys can come in and we can talk more. And I would really appreciate if we could do that because I'm just sick and tired of seeing the public left sitting there trying to fight with these gladiators. And the public just don't know what to say or do, and things are not happening the way they should.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I think if we as the public knew what our tools or weapons were, we'd be in a much more fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, too, that the public needs to have more information. I think the appropriate decisions can be made when you have all the information. I think what doesn't yet somehow, and I think this happens in a lot of different areas, that somehow that the public, you know, won't understand all these things. Believe me, I have great confidence in the public, and I've been on a lot of juries, and you know what? You don't have to know the law to sit on a jury and tell whether somebody's telling the truth or not.
Yeah, and I appreciate your mentioning the university and their role in helping the community. When you talked about, you know, how they could help with the marsh,
mm-hmm.
I never heard of that before. But, you know, the university has been absolutely silent and absent in these community issues. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they do have a role in helping the community or islands. Mm-hmm. It is very critical.
Yeah. Well, call if you would. Give me a call. You can call me at 782-6627, and we can go from there. Or you can call back at the station, 524-1080. And if you have people you'd like to recommend, or we'll have Mr. Joseph, if he's agreeable, to come in, and they can call and ask questions and talk. And folks, I hope you join in later, because sometimes the public, the frustration that they express, and some of it is justifiable. So, Steve, you're amenable to that, and you'd be, can I call you, and if it comes up,
yeah.
We make arrangements? Okay.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, let's do that, and I'm closing down here. I got about three more minutes. And, Steve, I appreciate you joining in with me and sharing, and until next time. I hope to get in touch with you, and I'll give you a call. Anything you got want to leave with?
No, I only with one thought. I think with the way oil prices went, we are going to see tremendous changes in both energy and waste. I can see a future that's going to be a lot different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay. On that note, I appreciate you joining in with me, and I really, really hope that the public give them a little more insight from the other side or in the middle or whatever. So thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha.
Okay. One little thing, guys. Just real quick. We need to get, you know, I was watching the other day, talking to a friend, and says, man, the police, they drive through. This is a different subject than trash. They drive through, they drive fast and run red lights and all. Why don't we give the police a break? If you want to complain, go down there and complain to your legislators who gave themselves a raise and then left you high and dry and couldn't make decisions. The police, they arrive, and remember the site up there on Cocoa Head Crater, or a young man stabbing people? How quick do we forget how safe they make us? And you don't know if that police officer was driving to go to a silent burglar alarm. You don't know what it is. So just know that they have their means of taking actions against officers who act improperly. But let's give them a break. And then the other day there was a fire, and the guy was screaming, they're not using enough hoses and all. And it's like, whoa, let's hold off for a minute here. Firemen, police show up at the scene. They don't know if there's poison in the air, lead in the air, asbestos in the air, and they are vulnerable. So let's think positive about those people. Talking about Homeland Security, why don't we give them a raise? And because at least when yesterday's incident, the guy collapsed, guess who were out there? The firemen, the police, exposing themselves to danger. So let's give them a break, and we need to be a little more careful and you know, respect those that need to be respected. Aloha, and thank you for joining me. This is the Carol Cox Show. Thank you.
KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.